Hello.
Hi.
Did you watch the Super Bowl halftime show?
I did not.
It was good because it was a medley of all of Rihanna's different songs, mm-hmm. and it was how she announced to the world that she once again was pregnant.
I mean, I saw that. But.
Yeah. Love the monochrome outfit. I'm always here for a nice, like, it was just red on red on red.
Yeah.
It was very cool, which I definitely think is one of her power colors.
Do you have a power color?
Yeah, we've already talked about this.
Did we talk about this?
Well, I said teal. It's my favorite color. And then I was like, maybe black. I think maybe I cut it out, but we've had extensive conversations about this. Because your color power is purple.
Yes.
You're wearing it today.
It's true. My therapist told me I need to be wearing a little bit of purple every day. And, you know, that's the kind of advice that I can get behind.
I think I have more, like, less of a power color and more of a power item or light.
Oh, okay. Do you want to share?
We've talked about this.
Do you know? No, I don't remember anything. This is how maybe our dear listeners at home have a better memory than I do. I don't.
But I also don't know if they've heard it because I cut stuff out.
Yeah.
So I talked about my clogs and how I would wear, if I would maybe be wearing the same outfit, but if I have on my tennis shoes, you know it's casual. But if I have on my clogs, you know I mean business.
I got you. Business. There's something about, like, the sharp click of hard-soled shoes on a floor that make you sound like you know what you're like, doing.
Bam, 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 bam.
You want people to know where you are.
Yeah. But sometimes, you know, all you need is a really comfortable pair of underwear.
This is true.
To make you feel in control of your own life.
The right pair of underwear that actually fits you well. And
yeah, that you're not messing with and you're not like, this was a bad choice.
You know what? Maybe perhaps the best underwear is the underwear that you don't have to think about.
No underwear?
No. Oh. Like the best underwear is the underwear
that you're not thinking about all day.
Yeah.
You're just
you're not like, I'm wearing this pair of underwear.
Right. You're just like, it's doing its job.
And I don't even have to think about it.
And I'm not thinking about it.
Yep. So does your underwear stand up to that test, dear listener?
Or is it slipping?
Maybe it's time for some new underwear. Uh-huh.
We've got better things to talk about, right?
Sure. Let's get into it.
This is Be Createful, a podcast about finding fullness through creativity. I'm Joe.
And I'm Madison. And today, on episode 109, we're talking about going into the unknown.
Are you going to sing to us?
I thought that might be a little on the nose. Although I do enjoy being on the nose, I figured this might be a respite for those parents of young children who have probably heard that song on repeat quite a bit.
Yes.
One of my favorite bands did a cover of it, so that version is stuck in my head.
And if you don't have children or young children, it's from Frozen 2.
Yes.
A song called Into the Unknown.
Yes.
So we'll have to be a little vague maybe if certain things come up, but basically what started this is a couple things. One... I texted a friend that she had introduced me to a new show. It's called Poker Face, by the way. It's fantastic. I am really enjoying it. It has cursing and murder, so, you know, if that's not your thing.
Oh, there you go.
She told me about the show, and I texted her and said, thank you so much, because there was a situation that was out of my control, and I said, this is keeping me off of Pinterest, which I think is the creator, like the creative dreamer's version of doom scrolling.
Yes.
So like doom scrolling would be when you are just so overwhelmed and you just keep scrolling.
Yeah. Through whatever news feed you've got, Twitter, Facebook,
yeah, and
Instagram.
Sometimes you're just like falling down a rabbit hole of whatever it is that's stressing you out. Sometimes you're trying to escape, but that can be what Pinterest is for my brain that cannot handle. Uncertainty isn't the right thing. Things that are like decisions that might be being made that I am not in control of. I don't need to be in control of the future, what happens in the future, but I need to know that I am able to make choices for myself and not having decisions just made that affect me and I have no agency.
It's almost like you need to you want as many options mm-hmm. available to you as possible. And you would not like to not see those doors like closed where you're only left with a few options
or like kicked out into the cold with no doors or options.
There you go.
So I just like to, be able to choose my own adventure.
Sure.
So anyway, doom scrolling Pinterest. And then I was talking to my mom. It's weird when I call her that because usually I say Mooley.
Yeah.
Mooley told me that when when I signed the lease for our current building that we're in now, I signed it for 3 years, and she told me that that terrified her. Like, mm-hmm. She just told me now.
3 years later.
And I said, really? I didn't feel terrified at all. Like, I felt exhilarated, and to me, the opportunity felt thrilling. Mm-hmm. And so that is what brought up this conversation of kind of the difference between having trepidation or maybe a fear of failure and reframing that as an exhilarating opportunity.
Which you bring
up the unknown.
Yeah, you bring up an excellent relationship there between the fear of the unknown and thrilling experiences, because both of those things require there's risk involved, mm-hmm. and potentially a certain amount of unknown factors that are happening. So oddly, the same things that make something scary can oftentimes make something thrilling or exciting or fun.
Yes. I've been trying to think about because I do not like to fail. I'll link it in the show notes because I don't remember what episode we talked about the fear of failure. We talk about it frequently, right? And so I do struggle with not wanting to fail, but somehow taking on risk or moving into an unknown situation is always thrilling to me. It doesn't feel the same. And so I've been trying to decide what makes one thing feel like fear of failure. Where does that fear start? And for me, I think it is in the execution, not the dreaming. So like dreaming about way in the future and taking steps towards something there feels exciting. Doing something like sending a newsletter campaign where I'm asking people for money and maybe they will say yes or maybe they'll say no, that's scary.
Sure. And I think a lot of people can resonate with that. Mm-hmm. That the easy part or the fun part is dreaming and figuring out, oh, what you could possibly do. And then when the rubber meets the road is really when the fear sets in. This is something I was trying to teach to my kiddos while I was running their Dungeons and Dragons campaign. Mm-hmm. I said, they had a story that they kind of wanted to play. And I said, now I can't confirm that these things will happen as you want them to, because part of the fun of this game is not knowing how things will turn out.
Right.
And then problem solving and figuring out what you can do with the choices that you have left.
Right.
But people still want to come back and have those experiences. It's that fear of the unknown and the possibility of failure or that things could go wrong that makes the wins feel that much bigger.
Uh-huh.
Again, taking kids for an example, if you're playing a game with a child and you let them win and they know, they won't like it. Most of the time they won't.
Right.
They want a little bit of a challenge to feel like there was a possibility of failing, but you didn't.
And so that then they know that they really got their win.
Exactly.
Something that you said sparked a thought, and I should have jotted it down because now I've lost it.
However, there's a lot of people that are terrified of the unknown. They want a lot of certainty. And what that gets people into is like a rut. You keep picking the same choices and staying safe and knowing what you like, and it doesn't allow for growth, because in order for growth to happen, you have to take some sort of risk, or there has to be something, a new stimulus or element that's introduced to your surroundings.
Yes. Sometimes those can be introduced in ways that are low risk. So sure. Like I was thinking about growth in terms of like getting stronger. Mm-hmm. So to get stronger, you add more weight or you add more reps or you're adding extra stress, extra stimulus to your muscles. And that is where the growth comes from. So you can grow in measured, incremental, planned steps. The problem is our lives don't exist within a vacuum. We don't have control over the variables that are interacting with us. And
we live in a group of other people who have the same, who have similar choices or different choices, and we have to live in their world as well.
Uh-huh.
So you have to navigate them.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend this morning, Sally, who sometimes listens to the podcast. Maybe she'll listen to this one and hear me quote
Sally.
Her. But she owns a fabric shop in Savannah, Georgia. And one thing I've been considering, because Make Do has all this, is something interesting happening outside?
I'm sorry. So we are, as you all well know, we're in downtown and I'm watching someone try to parallel park.
Oh.
And I want to encourage them. I'm like, no, keep going. You It'll can be do okay. It. Yes. We watch people try and fail quite often, yes. Not just in the studio, but outside the studio as well.
They're okay. They need to be a little closer.
They're
to the
fine.
Curb,
they just didn't start out all that great. Anyways, I believe in them. Go them.
You can do it. Yes. So, one thing I've been thinking about is a potential growth. Are we recording?
Oh, I was just double checking. Yeah. I have to do that every once in a while, because if you've been listening for a long time, you'll know that there's been, I think, at least two times that I haven't recorded.
I think only once.
Really, only once?
Only once that we recorded a whole episode.
Okay, good. So, yes. I always double check during the episode to make sure we are still recording.
And we are. Okay, good. There has been a time where Pip unplugged it.
Oh, yeah. Anyways.
So one potential area for growth for Make Do would be to expand into actually having a retail side of what we do, because we already have all of our fabric.
And we kind of do like a touch of that.
Yes.
We have open shop days,
right.
But we don't have like open hours where people can
Nothing
just come
Nothing with
in.
Any consistency, and no one knows that that is an option. So that could be, you know, an easy kind of pathway into a new new growth for Make Do. So I was talking to my friend Sally, who has owned her own fabric shop for a few years. And so I told her we were going to talk about this today, because like any business, she was like in a situation with her current, where her original studio, and then she had to find a new place quickly, and like how scary that was. And so I said, well, that's so funny that you mentioned that, because that's what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And so here's what she said about, like, was she scared, or did she have a fear of failure, or being kind of that thrilling exhilaration of, I don't know what's next, but I'm excited about it. And she said that exhilaration comes from knowing that what I'm doing is good and valuable, and that she is serving her community. She's providing space that people see value in. And so she will keep pursuing that, because that thing is worthwhile.
She believes in what she's doing.
Yes. And so as she was talking about that, I thought, okay, the reward, we always talk about risk versus reward. Well, for her and for us with the work we do with Make Do, when you're dealing with something that is more than just the numbers, when you're dealing with something that's deeper than capitalism, the reward is already there. It's built in. It's like baked into what you're doing. And so it has a huge advantage on any risk. So from, you're not starting at an equal place. So like when I think about growing Make Do, it's not reward and risk or on level playing field. Like the reward is already has such an advantage.
We're not waiting on the reward, because what we're doing is already rewarding. We're trying to get more of it.
It's intrinsic.
Yeah.
Right. And so we see that the risk is worth it, because we know the reward already exists. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is maybe where, if you are feeling like, oh, is this too risky? Maybe it's because the reward doesn't feel intrinsic. Mm-hmm. And so you either have to find an intrinsic reward, or it is going to be more of a traditional risk versus reward that you have to weigh.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that in context of, like in the, you know, I love me some people. So in the context of interpersonal relationships, I would say for me, the intrinsic value in those relationships is I can always learn something new or become a better person from each individual that I interact with. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you interact with people that turn out to not be so good for you as well. And you invest a lot of time into someone who may end up hurting you. Mm. Is there still reward if there's pain in a relationship? Mm-hmm. If there turns out to be rejection or some sort of like the relationship ends or whatever it may be, you have to find rewards that are outside of, well, at least I'm not lonely, because I think most people at this point, if you're an adult, you know that just trying not to be lonely is not a healthy way to pursue friendships, relationships, family relationships, any of that.
Yeah. And you even could say sometimes relationships, if I think about the relationships that are the hardest for me to navigate, it's the ones that I'm closest to. It's the mm-hmm. ones where the risk is actually higher
yeah.
because that relationship is so important to me versus you meet a stranger and the next thing you know, you're pouring your heart out to them and you think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm telling you this. I don't even know you. Well, there's no risk. You don't mm-hmm. know this person and you'll probably never see them again.
Yeah. Which is why, dumping on people like that is kind of rude. So if you happen to be a person who does that, I've done it before. Not a good practice.
But sometimes it's reciprocal. Like yeah. I've been in situations before where whether it was talking about struggling with what I believe about faith and the
yes.
the world, and I just
some bigger ideas that maybe are outside of your person.
Yes.
Personhood.
Yes. It's not necessarily like sharing my
your personal yeah. stuff that's going on, more of like big grand ideas that you have about
yes, that
the world.
Feel very much that's me maybe questioning who I am, mm-hmm. who I thought I was. And it feels risky to have those conversations with people that I'm really close to because like one, what if I change my mind about that? But two, what if I don't? And I'm actually a lot different than I thought that I was. And then what if those people don't like me? Like, those kind of conversations
yeah.
I have had with people that I think, oh my gosh, I barely know you. What? How did we start talking about this? And
mm-hmm.
but like kindred moment, kind like kindred spirit kind of yeah. moments that can happen with a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I gave you some time and you didn't say anything, so I'll jump in.
No, keep
again.
Going. Yeah.
I was trying to think of, because Mooli, when I was talking to her about this and I said, you know, it's like if I was jumping out of an airplane, I don't think I would have fear of failure. I mean, that's death, right? Like if you fail jumping out of the airplane, you would die.
Yep. Kind of train stops there.
I think that I would just be so exhilarated and thrilled for the adventure. And that would supersede any risk. Like the adrenaline that you get, that
yes.
fight or flight would come from exhilaration, mm-hmm. not from fear.
Well, so I did a little bit of reading up on that, specifically on thrill seeking. Mm-hmm. And obviously your like biological makeup has to do with how you approach thrill seeking. People who have less gray matter, like a layer of gray matter in their brain, are less likely to perceive threats, and are more likely to take risks and go on thrill seeking behaviors. Mm-hmm. Whereas obviously the opposite is those, you know, people will perceive threats as greater. So you might be trying to overcome some natural inclinations within your body, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you are beholden to being a thrill seeker or someone who's like, I need to have everything in control and set out exactly how I want it. So, people who seek out those thrilling adventures just may measure those risks differently. So this a person who wants to jump out of a plane, like you might see it as an adventure and someone else might think about all of the other risks and weigh them heavier than you might.
I am interested to know what is actually happening, not necessarily with your brain and the gray matter, but with your sympathetic nervous system. Like, because to me, it still feels like fight or flight
mm-hmm.
and an adrenaline spike, but that can lead you towards fear and like freezing or flight, or it can lead you into like a more exhilarated fight state.
So in the article that I read, it talked about how those chemicals are released regardless of whether or not you perceive it as thrill seeking or fear.
Right, right.
It really does depend on your outlook. Mm-hmm. So if you perceive something as terrifying, you are going to feel all of those chemicals and associate them with being terrified versus getting almost like a high off of.
And I would assume that in a different situation, those same chemicals would maybe give you a different reaction.
So they likened it to back when our species were hunter-gatherers and when we started hunting large game. So there was a lot of risk involved, but the reward was quite high mm-hmm. as well, a large amount of calories for us to consume. And so it's proposed that our bodies developed these chemicals not only to help us actually perform the task, but that our that people who performed these tasks and liked them and liked the chemicals were more likely to be successful and continue to go out and hunt that large game and would therefore take in higher calories and be more likely to reproduce. And, you know, it was beneficial to our species for people to be thrill seeking.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we see that not just for survival, but for pleasure. We see people who enjoy rock climbing, jumping out of airplanes, or perhaps sending a risky text message every once in a while. Don't act like you haven't felt that like little oomph when you like, oh, I'm going to send this, you know,
sometimes
this message.
I'll
it might
be,
stir things up.
You know, you're like holding your phone somewhere up high and you're like, I could just drop it.
Oh yeah. Now that's another interesting phenomenon that could be cool to like, that this is not the time nor the place to talk about that, but there is, it has like a whole bunch of research about like when you're on the precipice of something, you're like, I just don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could just, okay. I forgot what I was going to say about all that. We took it a different direction, but, I think that everyone has to kind of determine where your own tolerance is, right? So if you think about, I was never scared of heights.
Mm-hmm.
So from the time I was little, I was jumping off of a diving board. And then as I got older, I was like going higher up and jumping off of the high dive. So for some people, if you talk about even talking about jumping off the high dive is enough.
Oh,
like that's where their tolerance
palms.
Is. Yeah. Yep. And then some people could like walk up to the ladder, but mm-hmm. then, or they could swim in the deep end, but they're not going to jump.
Yeah.
Or some people will like, maybe they could climb the stairs, but then it's standing up on the top
mm-hmm.
that they start to get
yes.
scared. And so it really is so subjective.
Yeah. People have a natural tolerance, but something else they talked about in this article was you can build your tolerance. People who are thrill seeking, sometimes they need bigger and bigger thrills to be able to get those same sorts of chemicals. Well, if you are in situations that are, you know, risky, you will build up a tolerance to it. It just depends on where your tolerance starts.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like dopamine or any of the hormones that mm-hmm. the hits that we get, like you start to need more and more and more of it if you are addicted to it.
Yes.
If you are an adrenaline junkie, that's why they call them that.
Well, and what I really like about that is if you are a person who is very cautious, like moi, you can start to build up your tolerance and take steps into the unknown, and it will become easier each time. They may not be big steps. It may not be something like you're used to seeing in a movie montage, but you can increase your ability to step into the unknown and potentially, eventually, get a sort of thrill-seeking mindset into stepping into something new.
Another thing, I don't know if this is related to what you were reading or if this will take us somewhere a little bit different. The more you do something, not only maybe are you building up your tolerance or your ability to take on more risk, you also are gaining confidence in your ability to survive that thing.
Yes.
And so then if we step away from the thought of jumping out of planes or bungee diving or kind of the adrenaline seeking side of thrill seeking and move into taking risks in our personal life, whether it's our business or a relationship or creativity,
mm-hmm.
the more you do it and the more you live through it. I'm not going to say the more you succeed because mm-hmm. sometimes there's failure involved with that, but you still see that you went through and you made it to the other side. And especially the times that you fail are potentially more valuable because you see that the failure didn't keep you from continuing forward.
I think that there has to be an interesting type of failure in order to help push you forward, because I know that there are people who will experience failure, take it very hard, and stop.
Mm.
And that failure will keep them from trying again. And I think it comes down to a mindset, but as well, like we're talking about like trying to measure how much the risk versus yeah. reward. If someone has tried and failed and the risk is still too high,
yeah.
you may not try again.
I also don't know that we have the capacity to risk all the time in every aspect of our lives.
Oh, yes.
So,
it's so true. I love that you said that.
If you are if one area of your life is requiring a lot of energy and causing a lot of stress, you can't also be having all areas of your life do that. And risk is stress, even if it is rewarding stress. It still is draining on your body and your resources.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people that have been in situations where it's like, I have all of these things going on. I don't like any of it, but all of these situations will require some level of risk, mm-hmm. and you have to choose, mm-hmm. because it is a gamble on time and resources, just like creativity mm-hmm. is. And so you have to like kind of pick one. So that means you have to give yourself grace for the other places where you're not taking risks right now. And you have to be like, this is what I have to do in order to move forward in this area of my life.
Also, being a risk taker can become a personality that we take on. Mm-hmm. And we feel like, well, I want to be a person who takes risks. And so then if that's what you're prioritizing, or if you are in a situation where you feel like I can't do the risky thing right mm-hmm. now, then sometimes that can lead to some identity questioning too, or like,
what does that look like being, because that is so foreign to me, being like having a, wanting to have a risk-taking personality.
When I graduated college, like before I went to Ireland, I was looking for a way to leave the country. Like I just wanted to live elsewhere. I had crazy wanderlust, and it's like I thought that adventure could only happen somewhere else. Mm. And it didn't feel risky to me to like leave my family and go to another country and try something.
Oh, it didn't feel
risky? It did not. Okay. What felt more, the unknown I was more afraid of was being boring.
Yeah, staying here.
And
in the States.
Just fading like into, I guess, what was expected, like marrying someone and becoming a mom, and then that was all I was. That is not a judgment
for you,
on anyone.
That was not something that you necessarily had in mind or an inclination that you were interested
no.
in, right? So you were concerned about falling into a pattern versus having the choice to be able to choose what you want
yes,
to do.
Yes. So then when things fell in line for me to go to Ireland, and I was watching, you know, teammates and other people who were thinking about being on our mission team to Ireland, kind of questioning, like it was, seemed like a really hard decision for them. And because the decision was so easy for me, I mean, I didn't ever even actually say, am I going to go to Ireland? Yes or no. Like I met Scott and Denise and I said, oh my gosh, I'm going. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was too easy. This can't possibly be what God wants me to do. Like there should be more sacrifice or stress.
Oh yeah. And because so, it's in Christian circles, yeah. it is almost worshiped.
Yes.
That like people have chosen to give up this thing.
Yourself,
and it's like a big deal.
You're sacrificing, you know, going somewhere else. Anyway.
Your comfort zone, all of those sorts of things.
Yeah. So I had to learn that I was created. Okay. How do I say this? I haven't thought about this, so you can help me. Mm. If I say something that you think might be misheard,
okay,
let me know.
Yeah.
I think it's really easy to say God is in control. When we don't know what to do, we pray and we wait for God to tell us what to do. Sometimes that is, I'm going to use the word excuse because I don't know what else to say. A reason for inaction. We're afraid and we're so afraid of making the wrong decision that we just don't decide at all. And we say, okay, God, just make it clear. I think we also, it's easier if we just say God is in control. It takes a lot of our free will and decision-making off of ourselves versus acknowledging that if you believe that we were created by a creator for a purpose, instead of trying to find that mystery purpose in this haystack of possibility, trusting that who I am and how I was created serves value as I make decisions and live my life. And so I have the freedom to make decisions and trust that purpose will meet me there. So I thought of it, when I talk about this with like high school students or people who are, I don't know what to do. I think of it as like those hamster, you know, you could put a hamster in a ball
and let them run around
and they can run around. I am like that little hamster and God is like the ball all around me. And wherever I skitter around inside of my ball, all around the house, God is with me. Spirit is with me. It is above and before and all around me. And so sometimes I might run myself into a corner and get stuck for a minute, but it didn't mean I went the wrong way. God already put me in the ball in the house. And sometimes I might like roll down the stairs and get a little jumbled up. But if I am so worried about making a wrong decision, I'm not saying to be frivolous. Like, I think you can still make educated decisions. Like,
oftentimes people who are in these situations, because when I was in a young adults group, I had been out of school probably about 4 years at the time, maybe 3 years. And a lot of these people were still in college or still in grad school and they were about to leave. And they're like, I just don't know where God wants me to go.
Yeah.
And they were really concerned, like what you were saying there, about it being a wrong decision. But wrong and right implies a moral decision.
Right.
Versus an amoral decision. Something that can be made where there's not a right or wrong. It's just a choice.
Right. Or... I hear you.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they get hung up on that. And they think because, well, I want to go here because there might be some enticing things there. There might be some things that are tied in with pleasure where it's like, I might make more money here or I would be happier here. But I think God is calling me to this sacrifice over here. And they feel like it's the sacrifice that makes it worth it.
Yes, that is where I was. That is the train that I lost.
Yeah.
That we over spiritualize or over lift up. We like.
We glorify asceticism. I am depriving myself. You can do that in many different ways in your life. And practicing some level of whether it's fasting or. Moderation, it can all be good. But if you're only holding up that sacrifice is the most important, you become similar to like a monk or a nun who holds themselves up, who, you know, gives themselves over to poverty. And there are some people who are called to that, but not everyone is.
And maybe that does have value on internally, but does it hold value for building and serving community? I don't know.
So I feel like we're getting really deep in the weeds here.
I know. We've taken a turn.
Okay. All of this to say that when people are struggling with the unknown of what to do next, it can be sometimes easier to kind of kick the can along to someone else and say, well, I'm just waiting on God. When I think... at least the impression that I've gotten and a lot of the different weird, twisty choices that have happened in my life, that God, like you're saying, God's going to be there. And wherever you decide to go, you take him with you. There's not going to be a wrong place to go.
Right.
And the unfortunate part is not only are you taking God with you, but you're also taking all of your own personal baggage with you. So if you think that going to another country, you know, oh, it's going to be all of this, like, I'm going to be doing something so sacrificial. You're still taking all of your emotional baggage and stuff with you. You don't get to leave that behind.
And, right, like, it's never, oh, there's a little dog that's doing some training outside. They're doing much better than you, Pip. You need to learn some of that training. It's never going to be an escape or a fix for whatever is in your current situation now.
Having a new environment can have that effect for a little while, but you're there. Mm-hmm. You brought yourself. So whatever problems you're thinking about at home, your concerns about fading, that could have still happened in Ireland.
Well, I think that's what I learned, like, as I got older, right? So the first thing I learned was that I'm at my best when I am being filled up, then I can pour out more, right? So, like, I can serve God and love and community better from when I'm in my strengths. Mm-hmm. And so if God gave me those things, and if I'm following through on opportunities that play up to my strengths, then that is like co-creating a life that does exist out, not just for me, outside of me, but I also get to have agency and choice in it. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing I learned. And then I learned I don't want to be far away from my family.
There you go.
Like, I think I lost my wanderlust, and mm-hmm. now I'm fine if I never leave the country again.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that. The playing to your strengths, like, just be honest with yourself. If you do not have a gift for a gift, wow, I'm getting into some real churchy language here. If you're not interested in learning another language and traveling to another country, you probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
You should probably figure out ways to serve the community here or a community near you. Mm-hmm. Play to your strengths, because that's what God gave you, right? Gave you some talents, gave you some, you know, some abilities. Mm-hmm. It would be a shame to just not use those and pick some that someone else told you were better.
Right.
So,
I have a pretty high tolerance for risk, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's why when Mooley can say, I was terrified when you signed that lease. Yes. And I could say, oh my gosh, I wasn't.
It was thrilling.
Like, yeah. The hard part for me is continuing being consistent when the thrill isn't there.
I guess I have a lower tolerance for risk than you do. And it's because I don't leap into anything. Mm. Anyone will tell you that I am overly cautious. As Richard told me last night, Madison is a measure three times and halfway through cutting, still measure it again to make sure it's okay. And he's like, and I'm a person that's like, I measure it twice and I got two different answers, but the second one must be right.
Yeah. That's funny.
And so in those ways,
I'll trust my instincts when I cut it.
Yeah. Hopefully we will rub off on each other and become more balanced people. But in the few times that I have had to make big jumps, it's been very terrifying. And only recently, through a lot of therapy, have I started to see that regardless of whether I fail or I succeed, you have to jump.
Right.
At some point, whether the risk is high or low, you gotta make a decision. Mm-hmm. And so start out with those small ones. Mm-hmm. And when you get those small wins, you use those to kind of build on each other.
This might lead us into creativity specifically. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to practice. I'm thinking about, this is my suite for the week, so I'll just spoil it.
Yeah.
The mystery quilt, our first class met last night. And what was so fun for me was watching everyone pick their fabric, because they don't know. So it is very much this conversation.
Ooh, some people were willingly just like jumping and like, yeah, cool, I'll pick this.
And I gave them guidance. I had kind of laid stuff out so they would know.
They weren't totally blind.
What was going to touch what, and, you know, where you needed contrast and where anything goes. And some people really struggled still to pick their fabrics, and some people didn't. Yeah. But they, I'm really having a hard time holding on to all my thoughts. It's because, y'all, I'm in like
she's in a whirlwind of ideas and planning right now. There's yes. all of this dreaming that's happening in that gray streaked brain right now.
I have thin gray spots, right? Is that what it was?
Oh no. Not much. I was gray thinking matter. About your, the streaks of gray that are in your hair.
Oh, like I was thinking head. About my gray matter that is making me very susceptible to say yes to risk.
So anyways, there were some people that were willing to just like, all right, I can pick out these. And then others that had a hard time letting go.
Yeah. So this will be the whole experience of the mystery quilt will be a practice in one, trusting the process, trusting people around you who either know you really well or are very familiar with the situation you're walking into. It's like going into the wilderness with a guide.
Yes.
Right? Like, yes, it's scary if you were just dropped in all Bear Grylls style. What is she chewing? Pip got something. It's the disc on the chair. No. Okay. We're back. So you don't have to be dropped in like Bear Grylls. You can have a guide that takes you through the scary things. Ooh. That's me. I'm the Bear Grylls of the mystery quilt class. But at the end you get to see, oh, okay. I took a risk. I picked fabrics that I wasn't so sure about. It paid off.
Yeah.
Or, oh, I took a risk. I picked fabrics I wasn't so sure about. I hate it. I should have trusted my instincts. You get to learn both of those things. You said earlier about like that you don't have a very high risk tolerance.
Yes.
I think a lot of it and what we had started to talk about, I don't know if I made it full circle before, was the more experience you have teaches you that your instincts are valid.
Yes.
And or you might know, you know what? I always think that I want that strawberry flavored ice cream and then I get it and I never like it.
Yes.
Like that is an instinct I need to remind myself I do not like and just go for the coffee ice cream because it's good every time or whatever the situation. Yes. And then sometimes you learn, oh no, I am a really good judge of character.
Yes.
And if I think that someone is a dillweed, I need to trust that because yes. 9 times out of 10, they are a dillweed and that 1 time out of 10, it's not worth it.
Yes, absolutely. I entirely agree that sometimes we do need to test our instincts because we have internal biases that, or, you know, we've learned biases from other people that may be bad practice that we're like, not good. And sometimes we have innate instincts that are very helpful and you kind of have to test and see which is which.
Right. And you know, okay. So I have a little niece who is about 18 months old and you know, it's interesting. She doesn't have, it's interesting to see the ways that she's cautious and then the ways she's not, mm-hmm. you know, like a little kid doesn't know the stove is hot. Some things you have to learn. She does know, oh, I'm high up off the ground. Or, oh, I mean, she might think she's high. Like, she has to test that kind of stuff out. So some of those instincts are there and some of them are conditioned.
Yes. Yeah. Some of it's left over from when we were hunter and gatherers. Mm-hmm. And some of it is there for a very good reason.
Mm-hmm. We didn't need everyone to want to chase the big bison because you needed some people to survive and take care of.
Yes.
People, you know, you needed people who would run away back to the camp.
Yeah.
Or who stayed at the camp altogether.
And could stay up late and keep watch.
Oh, yeah. That's something we learned, too, is that night owls have an evolutionary purpose. We yes. protected the camp at night.
There you go. That's important. Mm-hmm. We have to do it every time in my D&D campaign. Whenever we camp for the night, you take watches. Oh. Oh. Because otherwise, you're going to get surprised by something.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. And you don't want none of that. None of those kinds of surprises.
No. Do you have a thought?
No.
Pip is in rare form today, y'all. It's because it's been rainy for a few days, I think. She's just sniffing around, like, trying to get into everything. Okay, I have some tips.
Yes. I do too. Just two, I think.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
They might be different now.
now that we've gone down a few different rabbit holes.
Yeah. Because I didn't really write much that I wanted to talk about. Only two things. And I've said a lot more than that. Okay. One tip that I have is to... we always talk about a door being closed or a window being opened or this kind of goes back to the sitting and waiting mm-hmm. to see a yes or an opportunity. And so my tip is to walk up and test the door. Mm-hmm. Like, is it locked or is it just shut? Mm-hmm. And if it's shut and you can open it, then maybe open it and just see what's on the other side.
So I have a story about this. When I was trying to get a teaching job and move to Tennessee, before Joe had locked me in here to make do, I traveled. I spent some good money. I went to a like a job fair and
in Tennessee.
Yes. And up to this point, I had not had a high view of myself, but I thought, I'm an excellent teacher. Mm. I know what I'm doing. I have experience in substitute teaching for a while. I can nail this. I took notes. I went to 3 or 4 different job interviews. I had a virtual job interview again later on, and all of them told me no. And so I could have walked away from that and thought, I'm obviously not a very good teacher, or there's something about me that, you know, they think would not make for a good teacher. But that's not the mindset that I came back with. Instead, it was more of, they didn't have enough time to understand the gifts and the things that I can do in a classroom. And obviously, even if I did get a job there, they probably wouldn't appreciate what I had to offer. And so I just kind of had to accept that. And so, yes.
You know who does appreciate what you have to offer? Me.
Yeah. So yeah, I walked up to that door and I jiggled that doorknob and it was locked.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say if it was, oh, it was for the better or the worst. I'm not here
to...
It just was. And so now I can say that I've tried that, but I have maintained within myself that I still have value. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference between when you fail well and when you don't fail well, is when you take it to the point of you're questioning your own personal value.
Right. Sometimes I think about Harry Potter and when they're in the Chamber of Mystery. Wait, what's it called?
Oh, my goodness. You put me on the spot.
Anyway.
The Department of Mysteries. The Department of,
I knew it wasn't chamber. But they're in that first chamber. They, like, go in and there's all the doors and it's, yes, like, spinning around, mm-hmm, and they have to decide what door
to go into,
to go through. I think we also can feel like if we even pursue an idea, we're committing to it. And so, sorry, I guess I'm jumping in with a second tip. I didn't know.
Oh, no, come on.
Saying, I want to know more about that is not the same as taking on all the risk of saying yes to the thing. Like, and you can be pursuing multiple opportunities at one time, and then you just see where yeses keep happening, or where a door opens and it doesn't get slammed in your face, then maybe you test that one out. Like, we don't have to commit. This is probably a bad effect of Christian dating culture. You don't have to, like, commit on a second date with something, or, like, with the person, but, like, just with anything, with a job, with anything. You don't have to take the first opportunity that you have.
Yes. So, and I would expand that just from Christian dating culture to dating culture, like, maybe it is Christian dating culture, but it seems like back in the 80s when my parents would talk about dating then, that you could go on, like, a date with someone, but it just meant that you were getting to know them. Oh. And you could date multiple people, like, go on a bunch of dates, uh-huh, with a bunch of people. Now, I am out of the dating game. I don't know what the apps are like. So
I think it's a dumpster fire is what the apps
are like.
From
what I hear, it's not great. And some of that is being brought back, where you go on a date with someone and you're kind of testing the waters. Mm-hmm. But back when I was, like, even in high school and when I was in college, I did go to a private Christian university, but in high school, I went to just a regular high school. There was, like, oh, they're talking. And it was almost like that person had already been taken.
Oh, right.
And you're like, oh, they're talking to someone. I can't talk to them.
Yeah.
Like, no, they're not committed to someone. Right. And it's only when they are, like, officially dating, going steady, whatever you want to talk about it, then there's a level of commitment there.
Right. So see, what we've done is we've taken the writ, like, where you have to make a decision. And actually, you don't have to decide to jump off of the high dive until you decide to jump. You can be standing up there and walk back down. But it's like, we've made it, if you even put your foot on the first rung, you're committed.
You're locked in.
Yeah.
You have to.
Silly.
You got to.
It's not Six Flags. You can turn around.
Well, and, you know, I think about when you said, when you're asking questions and doing a lot of research about an idea that you might have. I think a lot of people have concerns of, well, what if I talk to all these people and then I decide I don't like it and they come back and say, well, whatever happened to your bakery idea? And then you have to say, oh, well, I've gone down that road and I know I don't want to do this, or I'm not really interested in this particular part. I don't know why that's such a big deal. Yeah. He's saying it, but I know the feelings that I have of like, yeah, I would have a hard time telling someone, yeah, I thought about doing that, but I didn't end up doing it. Maybe because it makes it seem like I'm flaky.
I don't know.
Right. Right. But like, you don't want to commit to something just so you can save face for other people.
No. And also a lot of times you can't decide if something is worth pursuing unless you are externally processing it with other people. I mean, you might decide. There is internal processing that can happen, of course, but as you continue along that decision, you have to talk about it to see if it still holds water.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. That was my first tip that ended up being more than one.
No, I love that. My first tip is asking yourself the question, what's the best that can happen? We're good at asking what's the worst, but what is the best? Because you might find that your pipe dream and that your pie in the sky idea is actually not that hard to reach.
Right.
You're like, oh, that's really the best that I can think of. That actually sounds pretty doable.
Yeah. Or like maybe you see, well, I can get myself 80% there.
Mm-hmm. Or you're like, okay, maybe I can't do the full thing, but like, yeah, most of the way. So,
and then I guarantee you, once you get to that 80%, the next 5% will become apparent. Like you just keep going to the next thing.
It's just part of appropriate risk calculating. You don't just say, well, what is the worst that can happen? Right. You also have to consider what you're going to gain from it and then compare the two. You have to be realistic.
Yeah. And that's where weighing opportunity cost comes in. So I was talking to someone about, oh, if we have a decision for choice A or choice B, and choice B is going to save us some money, and we're like, oh, but that's only like a little bit of money that it's saving. And I said, yeah, but over this much time, what could we do with that money? Like, is that worth saving or not? Because maybe it's not, but maybe it really is. Okay. My last tip that I know of, we'll see if there's more, is to, I don't know what this means. Okay. I wrote, keep your eggs in the right perspective. I think what I meant is don't all your eggs, you know, we say don't put all your eggs in one basket, but also all of your eggs are maybe not the same size or the same value. Like, and this might go back to what we were talking about. You can't risk everything in every aspect of your life all the time. But also choosing what fabrics I want to put into my quilt are a pretty like small egg. And also if I drop that egg, that's okay. Versus choosing, am I going to buy a house that is maybe over leveraging myself, is a really big egg that would need some really strong data to support that it's a good decision. And so we can't treat all of our eggs like they're equal. And practice, if you have a low risk tolerance and you want to be someone who's comfortable at least pursuing opportunity, then test it out with some really little eggs. Come take a class to make do. A mystery quilt. Pick some fabric that you don't know how it's going to turn out and just see what happens.
It's true. I like that. My last one was just, I think it goes along exactly with what you're saying. It's just appropriately assessing the risk. Make, you know, make a pros and cons, talk about worst case scenario, best case scenario, and try to approach it from a way, from a more objective standpoint.
Yeah.
There are going to be emotions involved, and perhaps the emotions is what makes something really, really scary or potentially really rewarding.
Right.
Could be either way. And find someone to talk it out with, just like we're doing here. Whether that's a therapist, a trusted friend. And I would prefer that you go and talk to someone who has some practice stepping out and taking risks. Otherwise, you end up kind of in the same, like this, in a similar place where I have been before, where it's like, no, just like keep it small, keep it the same, and you'll be fine. And that's not going to help you practice some risk taking if that's something that you're interested in.
Yeah. Or sometimes it doesn't matter if you're interested in it or not. Like you said, a decision has to be made.
Yes.
Like sometimes it doesn't matter how much we detest needles. We still got to get the shot.
Yes. It's got to happen.
And so having some tools in your belt to rely on or steps to take to where you're never going to eliminate the risk or the unknown, but
no,
you can,
because then you take away the fun of it.
Well, what I mean is there's no way to know the future.
Sure.
There's no way.
Sure.
So you're never going to be able to eliminate every possible, look at it from every possible scenario. But what you can do is say, I am an intelligent person who has spent a lot of time thinking about this, and this is the most informed decision. You can still make an informed decision even if risk is involved.
Yes, yes. Exactly. Like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Cool.
What is your sweet?
My sweet this week is that hopefully tonight, well, should be sometime this afternoon or tonight, I'm going to go ice skating.
Hey-o, where? In Little Rock?
Yeah, I've been meaning to go. We were supposed to go around Christmas, but it just never happened. I love rollerblading and ice skating. Mm. Don't know why. Just a fun thing for me to do. So I'm going to go tonight and just have a good old time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My sweet's the mystery quilt. We had our first class last night. It was so fun. Everyone went home with a little bit of homework. Am I going to finish my homework?
I was going to ask you about that, if they're going to have to finish some things at home.
Yeah. It's minimal. Like, no one's having to sew. They're just ironing. Maybe some people have to do some cutting, and then they're ironing, and then
okay.
We'll. So they all have to kind of be on the same step so that I can give them the next
That's true.
Step.
Yeah. Okay.
Sour.
Well, yeah, my sour is, it's been raining, like
a
Joe
lot.
Mentioned. It's been raining a lot, and that, it definitely tanks my mood.
Mm.
But
I love it.
But I know
that not everyone does.
I'm glad that it's sunny right mm-hmm. now. So I think if the weekend can stay like this.
I mean, I don't love when it stops raining and the interim in between all the water being gone and there not being rain because now there's just puddles all in my backyard. And Pip likes to make herself a little hot tub.
Oh,
or like,
of
you
like,
know,
like mud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have to like, keep an eye on her.
What's your sour?
My sour is, I really have not been getting very much sleep.
No.
Does
it have to do with that vortex that's going on in your
head
right
now? The reason is because we're at the precipice of some risk, which I love. So,
but your body is like, hey, I need to be awake for that.
Yeah, I think it is my, trying to just figure out. I like to play out all the scenarios. I like to have a big Pinterest board. I like to have some spreadsheets. I like to, like when there's uncertainty, I will fill in the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there's a lot of uncertainty, I will fill in the gaps for as many scenarios as I can come up with.
Yep.
As some decisions start getting made and uncertainty is narrowed,
mm-hmm.
then I can focus in. And then once we have a plan, I can sleep. But
okay.
I'm at my best when there's some pressure.
Yep.
And so this is also, it's kind of dangerous because
that means that you're working at like 150%.
And I'm like having fun.
Yes.
So, but the sour is, I know that I should sleep. I have book club on Tuesday and I have not read my book. So I'm going to see if this weekend I can actually be like, hey, Joe, let's set a timer and read for a minute.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Put that energy towards some other thing.
Or some just some calming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some impulse control.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing with Pip.
No. I'm learning this weekend to use more of what's in my house to create. Just to create, period. But I've been doing a few more house DIYs. And if you are a creator, then you know that there's a lot of like new things and materials that you buy, whether it's house DIY or like for me, it's making clothes. But I thought, you know, I've got this curtain rod. It's fine. I just don't like the color. I'm like, why was I going to mm-hmm. go and buy another one? Mm-hmm. I'll just go and paint it.
Mm-hmm.
So this weekend, I'm going to be learning how to prime and spray paint some like curtain rods and some shower rods because the shapes are fine. I just want it in a different finish. And that's going to be, That's better because there's less waste. I'm not just throwing away a curtain rod and I'm using what I already have.
Yeah. If you get the right spray paint, you might not have to prime it.
Oh, sweet.
I am speaking from experience when I painted my bathroom black.
Yeah.
And my toilet paper holder mm-hmm. was inset into the wall.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just silver, like mm-hmm. ugly chrome. And I thought, oh, I need it to be black. I can't have this silver like box. And so I was going to buy one. And then I thought, I'm going to spray paint this. Mm-hmm. So you can get like a metal spray paint.
Sweet.
Now I would test it because, okay, on a shower curtain.
Because you've got rings that go back and forth.
Yeah. But I would also say check the can because it might have a curing time. So it yes. might need like 3 days. So yes, then if you test it too does. Soon, then it will still scratch off.
Yeah. I'm less worried about the curtain rods because I'm not going to be like, they're not yeah. going to be going back and forth as much. But yeah, that's good. Good to know. I'm just going to have to live without curtains for a hot second.
Yeah.
So what are you learning?
Oh, I forgot it was my turn. What am I learning? Well, I mean, I had a conversation today about operating a quilt shop.
Hey, there you go.
I am learning to slow my roll.
Hey, you are going to be practicing having some quiet, calm time.
That's right.
That's good.
I kind of have the song, you know, I've got no strings to hold me down. I've got that stuck in my head, but it's like, I've got no chill to hold me down. I just feel unhinged. I said earlier that my imagination is unhinged.
I love the word unhinged.
I've got that big dreamer energy, y'all. Doom scrolling on Pinterest. Oh. You know, if it's not one thing, it's another. Yeah.
You're going to be dreaming about something.
Stir up some createful drama somewhere. So, like, it's either going to be for make do or for my house. That's why I have unfinished projects everywhere. Once I can start to see it, it's boring, and then I want to move on.
Oh, it's in the execution that it always gets you.
I know. Blech.
Oh, having to actually put that plan in action.
I know. So that's why it's really probably best that I don't share a house with someone. I don't know, unless they were a good executor.
Yeah, if they're like, oh, yeah, you want me to finish that up for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you want me to finish taking this glass from wherever it started from and then you just left it in this random place? I can do that for you, too. That's what I need.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Well,
hey, we did it.
We did.
Sunshine, minimal disturbance from Pip and people parallel parking. But, y'all, we had another conversation.
Yes. Well, enjoy your day.
Well, hope it's sunny.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to my dear, dear friend Craig Hudson for our very createful theme music. You can hear more of Craig's music on Spotify under Craig Hudson, that's Hudson with a T, or you can just click on the link in the show notes. Also, be sure to connect with Make Do on Instagram at Make Do Create or on Facebook at Make Do Cersei, and visit our website, makedocreate.org, for upcoming classes, show notes, to order a face mask, lots of things.